Breezy.
Yeah.
Looks like they back for a fifth season, man.
Who that?
Sports Roundtable.
Who?
S-R-T crew.
Whoa.
S-R-T. Yeah. They got that realness flowing in they DNA. Damn you lame if you ain't tuned to S-R-T today. H-O got that payload when he say so. What you betting on?
Okay.
Don't get mad at me on fantasy. Break up Kyrie LeBron.
Oh, no.
I be smooth as sports superhero Hancock in the mix. Deal with roll tie forever. Real talk, you know who he gon' pick. See where I be with S-R-T. Behind the glass, that G-Money. Man, with a strong, I never lose. Six man elite, that's Jay Smooth.
All you other sports radio shows, it's fake news. Bleed it. Turn up your radios, cause it's time for S-R-T Radio.
Tenants, this is G-Money, the man behind the glass for Sports Roundtable. And in celebration of Independence Day, we are giving you a best of episode with some of the best moments from Sports Roundtable. We'll have some buy or sell, ballers and busters, some hot news. We also have interviews with friends of the show, James Forrest and James Robinson. And of course, we can't end the show without getting something off our chest or telling you that we hated when or finding out what's in the fun bag. So just sit back, relax, lick the barbecue sauce off your fingers, and enjoy the best of Sports Roundtable, Volume 1. So in this first clip, we have Kevin Durant, who just came off his first championship, going to the Golden State Warriors in a controversial move. It's still controversial 2 years later. But in his second season with the Warriors, he's been getting into it with a lot of different players, including some referees. He's leading the league in technicals. And he even got into it with someone who would eventually become his teammate. Let's hear what happened.
D. Will, your main man, got a ring last year. And now he leads the league in technical fouls and ejections. Is he trying to be a tough guy now? KD.
I don't know if y'all recall, but back in 2010, when OKC went up against Miami, Kevin Durant made the comment that Chris Bosh was a fake tough guy. I think that mantra can go to KD now. For anybody, I understand what his reasoning was after the game, saying nobody wants to fight in the NBA. Nobody's going to throw punches. Blase blah. I understand that, okay? But here's the issue I have with it. Why was you acting so tough then? And don't you know sometimes you can be mad at somebody, but you know you really don't want it with them? He was mad, but he really don't want it with Boogie. Like, Boogie's one of them people, I don't care if you want to fight, he gonna make you. Okay, let me, Ben Wallace on Meta World Peace, or Ron Artest. That night at the Palace, Ben was way madder than Ron. Everybody don't want it with Ron, but he ain't want it with Ben. You understand where I'm coming from?
He sure did not.
KD was acting like he was mad, but he ain't really want it with Boogie. Because Boogie was like, what? And walked off, and then he said something. He turned around. Hold me back.
You know it.
And so my thing is, Kevin Durant is not a tough guy, okay? He's real thin. He's 145 pounds soaking wet. He long. He might get one or two in, but that chair might be glad. All right? So I'm not going to call him a fake tough guy, but he's a tough guy that's fake.
Right. But what would he do? We'd have had a Lonzo Ball situation if he wouldn't have said that, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
If he walks away.
If he doesn't act like he want to fight, then everybody go try him. Right?
See, and that's the issue I have with the NBA.
Right.
What he said is absolutely right.
Nobody's
going to fight.
You won't give up that check. Ever since the malice in the palace?
It's not happening.
Not happening.
Okay, but for him to go through the whole theatrics of it, come on,
gotta put on the show, D.
Man, come on, man.
Yeah, put on the show.
Business.
You don't listen. Boogie from Birmingham. You don't play with them boys,
Boogie,
man.
Boogie ain't gonna swing and get rid of that $100 million either.
Oh no, Boogie will hit you. Boogie don't care nothing about that.
Not gonna get rid of $100 million.
Hey, so they'd rather take the ejection fine rather than the.
Well, I'm saying if he swings, he'll get what, 15 games. That's about it.
If he causes a crazy situation like what happened out there, and all everybody
look at that, look on that, look
crazy.
Who's on that floor, and who ain't nobody going crazy on them two teams.
And who's gonna like hold said, Boogie back?
Nobody's gonna fight. If that's my point, who's if Boogie wanted to fight,
yeah,
that's what I'm saying. He want to fight,
yeah, boy.
Now, if they would have, if it probably would have got physical, maybe so. But I don't. Nobody's gonna do it.
KD yeah. ain't want them problems.
Kevin Durant, tough guy. Nobody's really buying that. But moving on to our next moment here, we have two members of the Sports Roundtable crew, Hancock the Sports Superhero and Jay Smooth the Sixth Man, both hailing from Memphis, Tennessee. And they received some good news a couple of months ago when hometown hero Anthony Penny Hardaway was named the head coach at the University of Memphis. And here's their reaction to that news.
Penny is coming home to Memphis, and that's all I'm going to say, and I'm going to be quiet.
You said it, you know, and the excitement, I can hardly contain myself, so you know the city is on fire. I talked back to a good friend of mine who listens to the show regularly, and he was telling me that the excitement, not only for Penny and trying to bring the basketball back to a Memphis frenzy,
right.
You know, it's also down the whole downtown area. Everything, all the businesses and everybody welcoming him there because they know it's going to bring in revenue.
Almost like LeBron coming back
exactly.
to Cleveland.
He's going to add some money to the downtown economy. So, but the thing about bringing Penny back to Memphis and getting, you know, Memphis, and it's hard for me to just keep saying Memphis and not say Memphis State,
right?
Because that's what I grew up on. You know, being from that area. First recollection I can remember was back, you know, them playing in the Mid-South Coliseum and having all that local talent. You know, seeing that a team that went to the NCAA tournament in 95 got all the way to the Final Four with 11 Memphis players on a 12-man roster. You had 11 homegrown players. And don't get me wrong, they've had success after that. You know, Calipari had it going there.
Right.
But he never felt like a Memphis, you know, he never felt like family. He always kind of knew the right situation came along, he'd be out of there.
Right.
So everything was kind of like, it wasn't a firm foundation. But by getting, you know, Penny in the fold, now you have that foundation, somebody who knows Memphis, who understands the city, who's actually got, you know, a foothold in the city. You know, his organization, his basketball organization,
right.
All the guys he's put in, you know, into the college ranks right now, and even the guys that have coming up through his system, they can probably kind of funnel through his and come in right into the program. You know, so that's going to be a big thing. He's already got one guy who's probably going to come there. Hadn't committed yet, but saying that, you know, he's out of his letter of intent with Wichita State. So now he's coming. He's free. So probably be there with Penny. There are also All-Americans at East still left there waiting to come. So we're waiting on the big 6'11 kid. Help me with his name.
James Wiseman.
So we'll look to see him. And also putting a foundation of coaches and having that culture there. From what I understand, we will be trying to get Larry Brown in the fold as an associate head coach, which I think will be a great addition. You know, Penny, you know, taking that step up from high school to college, I'm sure he needs somebody to kind of guide him through some of the situations. So Larry Brown could be a good bridge to help him, you know, get where he needs to go. Also, we talked about Tony Matlock coming and being a part of the program. Also, a guy that you're familiar with here that took another team to a final, Paul Hewitt, is on his list as a possible assistant coach.
I like that.
So
those are
things that he's looking at building the program around, having good, solid, you know, coaching around and getting the talent and keeping those kids that, you know, from Memphis that are the 4- and 5-star talent. If you can look around the NCAA now, you can find Memphis players all around, just like we talk about here in Georgia, that get out.
Right.
If he can lock that area up and keep those kids home, you'll be hearing Memphis' name in the national publications.
All right, Jason Moore, I know you want to jump in there and talk about Memphis. I see you smiling, and the Memphis Grizzly possibly go get the number one pick as well. So I know you got a lot to smile about today.
Yeah, of course I do. And for me, by all accounts, this is a win-win for Memphis in maybe every area. From a basketball standpoint, as Hancock mentioned, he's going to bring in certain recruits. And his starting five at East High School, which won their third straight championship, Tennessee State Championship, all of those guys are going to play Division I. And Alex Lomax, who was Mr. Tennessee, like you said, he's decommitted from Wichita State, and he's likely to be at Memphis because this kid, Penny actually took him in, from what I understand. He's been living with Penny for the last 4 or 5 years or so. Financially, it's a win as well. There was a struggling basketball economy.
Mm-hmm.
Attendance dipped. The Memphis Grizzlies, they threatened to pull out some of their funding.
Right.
And there was one more thing. The $4.7 million in lost revenue.
Exactly.
So,
Touch on the Grizzly thing a little bit more about the attendance being having to hit the 8,000 mark.
With
the attendance had to reach 8,000 fans per game.
Right.
An average, rather. Average of 8,000 for them to get an $800,000
incentive.
Well, exactly.
Revenue boost from the Grizzlies.
Right.
The Grizzlies were going to pay that.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't meet those expectations. So that's lost money.
Mm-hmm. And this was the first time in 48 years because the FedEx Forum where the Grizzlies and Tigers play, it opened in 2004. And since then, they've never had an attendance problem. But Tubby's last 2 years have been, you know, a disappointment to say the least. But Penny, he's going to remedy all of that. And, you know, well, ticket sales have already increased.
Yeah, believe me.
Only to, and it's funny, they only increased them by 1 cent for now. So ticket prices, they're going to start at $100.01.
That's marketing.
Yeah, marketing.
So great marketing. But in any way imaginable, I mean, it's a great win for Memphis. I'm kind of disappointed in Tubby Smith and his representation. Ricky Lett, who's his attorney, who came in at the last hour, and there's this rumor going around that Penny sort of undermined Tubby Smith's recruiting efforts in Memphis.
Ooh.
And Penny, who we already let it be known, he controls most of the talent in Memphis with Team Penny and at East High School. And Ricky Lett, who's Tubby Smith's lawyer, he felt that Penny sort of undermined his efforts. Like Ricky Lett said that they went out, they did the work, they put in the, they made the visits, they made the phone calls, but guys weren't coming to Memphis because of Penny Hardaway.
Wow.
So I don't know if there's any truth to that, but you know, I hate to see things like that come out. Tubby, just go away, just take your 9.75 million, go away, retire. I mean, if you don't want it, I'm glad we'll take it. We'll split it between us four. But I'm excited though. This is a great thing for Memphis, the city of Memphis, and I'm excited to see what he does.
Hey, let's go Tigers.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what Slick Money got to say. I'll probably give him a call after the show and see what he got to say about Penny coming home. Another thing that I did hear that on a lighter note, that the first home game for Penny, they may have 8-Baller MJG perform at halftime.
Really?
No.
Okay, you had me there, homie. You had me there, but hey, that would be good. Keep it all in the
orange mouth.
Yeah.
Lots of excitement for Memphis basketball. We'll see if Penny can get them back on the map. So in our next clip, we talk about breaking the unwritten rules of sport. All these athletes have these unwritten rules, things you shouldn't do, just as a common courtesy in the spirit of sportsmanship. We're about sportsmanship here at Sports Roundtable, but sometimes it might go a little too far, or logically, you have some other options.
Let's talk about the unwritten rule. Lance Stevenson last night.
Born ready.
With 3 seconds left, they up 15. Toronto misses a long jump shot. He gets the ball and basically goes down to the other end and scores. And P.J. Tucker, DeMar Carroll, and
DeMar DeRozan
was at him like they said something about that. He said something about their grandmother and mother all together.
Mm-mm.
And they went at him. And to no avail, no other Pacer teammate came to defend him.
See, that's what I'm upset about. You have to take care of your brothers on the floor, man. And I just, to me, them not to even go to his defense, the unwritten rule thing to me was a farce anyway. I'm so sick of that kind of stuff. If you don't want him scoring,
stop it.
Hey, you don't want to lose by 15, play better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, seriously, it is what it is, man. I mean, why is it, I love what Bobby Bowden used to say when they were talking about him running up the score.
He said, it ain't up to him to hold the score down. It's not my job. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to tell my players that they don't get to play much. Mm-hmm. So when I put my third and fourth team in, if you can't stop them, I'm sorry.
Oh, well.
Yeah, you need to recruit better.
Go ahead, Jim.
I think that Larry Bird may have said, I think he likes Lance Stephenson as a player.
Yeah.
I think he may have asked him, like, why didn't he dunk it? Like, why are you letting
yeah.
up?
Yeah. Why you ain't? You should. But he should have. Listen, G, I'm so happy you said that, because my opinion on this was going to be, he should have did a windmill.
Yeah, he should have win.
He should have windmill, hung on the rim, did the LeBron monkey swing.
Point at him.
Hey, listen, come off with the Marshawn Lynch celebration. Just holding it. Do the Randy Moss in the air.
We know what he is. Be what you are.
Hey, listen, because that's my thing is, I don't understand, how dare the Toronto Raptors be mad because I get a rebound, you're walking up the court like, I quit, and you mad that I went and laid it up? That's like, you know what? Never mind. Listen, the Toronto Raptors should be ashamed of themselves, because my analogy was going to be left field. So I'm just going to keep it in. Listen, the Toronto Raptors should be ashamed of even thinking about getting mad. Listen, if you so mad about it, Corey Joseph, who is right behind Stephenson when he laid it, how about you go foul him?
Yeah, foul him.
If you so
mad, stop him.
Go foul him. Yes, stop him from scoring. Right. But to get mad and try to chase him down and be like, hey, man, you shouldn't have did that. You scored on me when the game was over. Man, you better turn.
It's lucky. See, he put his hand. See, my thing, they put their hands on him.
Yeah, they grabbed
about
him.
A layup.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? If he had all rights to smack.
Five,
see what I'm saying?
Five.
You had no reason to put your hands on that man.
Hey, man, don't y'all.
You didn't foul him laying it up. Why you gonna touch him after he scored?
Hey, listen, if the audience don't notice on Facebook Live and live on the air, we're having a hard time keeping our emotions intact right now. So if we can't come up with these beautiful adjectives to describe what we're talking about, just bear with us. Just know what we're talking about. When we say just know what means.
I know that's right. They did the same thing JaVale McGee the other night, because he shot a three.
Yeah, exactly.
You lost. You gave up 139 points.
And you made it, JaVale.
And you mad about a three?
Hey, JaVale never gets to shoot a three. You don't think I'm pulling? I'm up 40. I am pulling.
It might be in his contract.
Incentives.
You should have been mad about the 139.
That one you should have been mad about.
So do you consider Lance's actions shenanigans? Me, personally, I don't. But will LeBron be able to put up with it? That remains to be seen, and more on LeBron later. So, in our next clip here, you had the NFL draft in May. Lamar Jackson taken by the Baltimore Ravens. He will be playing quarterback. No worries there. There were some worries before the draft, and we all know why.
Lamar Jackson moving position. Why is that even a question?
Because he's black. I mean, let's just be real. I mean, just keep it 100. I mean, the man throws the ball. He runs the ball. He does a lot of things with the football, man. In that position, I mean, the only reason he would have to move position is you can't talk about his stature. You can't talk about anything else. What else can it be? You tell me. Because to me, it's just that he's a black quarterback.
It doesn't make any sense. The only reason why he ran so much is because Louisville didn't have anybody else.
What are we seeing in
the whole offense?
What are we seeing now in the NFL that's coming from college? RPOs, right?
Yeah.
And what is he good at?
RPO.
And what kind of pressure will he put on the edge if he fakes the dive and you go inside? He's going to turn the corner and go to the house. Right?
Yeah. So it's asinine to even think. But then you got to check your resources.
But look, at the quarterbacks that are in the NFL right now. I mean, they struggled to fill out 30 quarterbacks this year, man. Starters.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you still got Trevor Siemian and what's the other kid in Denver?
So where'd you hear that?
Well, some of these prognosticators during the draft, and you know who they are. Yeah. So
look, man, it's to me, that would be the only reason. That's the only reason.
They won't say that though.
Well, that's a good thing we can see it on their side, too.
Yeah, it.
Until you muzzle me, I'm going to say it.
I agree. Yeah. Go ahead, Smooth.
Honestly, I don't think it's a mistake that, you know, maybe arguably the most prestigious position in all of sports is still mostly held by, you know, a specific race. Mm-hmm. You know, let's just be candid about it. Let's be honest about it. And I think Hancock hit it on the head earlier. I mean, that's what it is. You know, you hate to continue to play the race card, but I don't think it's a mistake at all that all that they want a certain position in the NFL to remain predominantly white.
Yeah, that race card. If you keep dealing me the Joker, I'm going to keep playing it. That's
so what y'all saying is the Texans hurt Deshaun Watson on purpose.
Yeah. How you let him get hurt in practice? Why do brothers get hurt in practice? Teddy Bridgewater, Deshaun Watson, conspiracy. They're hurting the brothers in practice.
Lamar Jackson isn't the first, and he most certainly won't be the last quarterback in which we have that kind of conversation. But moving on to another college football conversation, in January, we had the national championship here in Atlanta between the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Georgia Bulldogs. It went to overtime. Alabama came out on top. But we did have a lively conversation about what transpired in that game.
All right, man. Let's start it, and then we go to break, and when we come back, we go finish it. But I'm gonna take it to break this way. And we talked about it earlier, the Georgia Alabama game. Personally, I think Kirby Smart did not prepare for what happened in the second half as far as bringing in Tua. It's no way that he could have prepared for that because they looked lost ever since. To me, what happened was they got tight in the second half only because in the first half, it didn't matter if they went 3-and-out because they figured they can stop Alabama anyway. Because if I'm making Jalen throw the ball, that's what I want him to do anyway. So I can go 3-and-out. And if I get points for it, if I get some points on the other, it's just bonus. Second half came, and Tua started throwing the ball. That started to put a little pressure on. Now we need to try to score. So it mattered if we went 3-and-out. And then you start to see Fromm not make those passes that he would normally make.
Georgia had a bad scheme because we talked about this. They came out, and their first 9 plays were passes. They didn't run the ball the first 9 plays. Their first 2 series, they had 0 runs.
I thought that was genius myself.
But it didn't work. He ended up throwing an interception. They got 3 points out of it. That's all. So I
feel what you're saying.
They didn't get much. But in the second half, when it was time to open up like they did in the first half, when they needed to throw the football, what did they do? Their last 2 series, they only had 2 pass plays.
Yeah.
They got tight. That point blank period.
But he missed. On third down, the Swift that
my one
play.
That's
tight. I know.
We can look at whether the defense didn't do. I can look at these plays. The touchdown that he hit Ridley on was luck.
Oh,
that was covered. He threw that in the coverage.
Well, no, he was throwing that to somebody
else.
No,
you had 20 sitting right there. Reed just didn't make a play on the ball. He came behind. Ridley came right behind 20. 20 was sitting there.
Yeah, he was throwing it to Najee Harris.
Exactly, and Ridley came behind him and intercepted the ball. The other play, the winning touchdown, you had the right defense on. You had a 2-deep against a fly pattern. The safety stayed on the hash. The first thing he's got to do on the play is get wide deep. And get deep.
Man, that was Tonga Viola, though. That was all quarterback.
It still doesn't matter. Now, one thing to me, he got left on the island because not on the island, but the corner's job is to reroute the receiver. He's got to put hands on him to reroute the receiver. The receiver got a free release, went straight up the rail. And the safety, his job against that on 2-deep is always as deep and as wide as the receiver. His thing should have been. There was nothing holding him. He didn't have a crossing.
Quarterback held him.
That's what I'm saying.
That was great quarterback play.
He should not have been held because his job, he didn't do his job. His job is to do what?
that half of the field.
Exactly. See, he was playing quarters coverage like he had a man outside. That's his response. That's why 14 was like, yeah, I got beat, but where were you? Right. Because his job was, 14's job is to redirect and take care of anything underneath. He's supposed to do that. That you a fly pattern against cover two is not supposed to work. To, now, to your point, Tua threw a rope. But that safety has to get off that hat.
I understand but, what you're saying.
But, Tua was looking to his
doesn't
right.
Doesn't matter.
He, and that's what made that safety move over. There.
That's what made the safety go over.
Right, right. It's two safeties.
Yeah, it's two, it's
that's not his side.
Let me tell y'all something. That's not his side. Let me tell y'all something. The play that Bama called was called all goals. Right. So we had three receivers on one side, one on the other. So it was three receivers running go patterns. So the safety, when he held him with his eyes, he had to cheat that way.
He does
if not,
not
it was, listen, somebody was going to be open on that play if the safety doesn't go there.
Well, you don't give up the touchdown.
You were giving up a touchdown regardless.
His responsibility
go back and watch
is,
the play, Hand.
I watched it. I watched it from the all 22. Yeah. I watched it all night from the all 22. He stood there. Well, he first thing he did was took a step to the left.
Two people were going to be
and
open.
And he shouldn't have. He should have – his responsibility is deeper and wide as the zone. When you're in cover two, you don't have quarter coverage. You got half the field. And he should have been deep. Now, I do it again. Say,
got to give offense
that
credit,
safety
man.
Has to put hands on that guy. He can't get a free release. His job is to make him redirect. He didn't. But that safety blew that coverage.
We definitely have a lot more where that came from as far as the conversation about the game. What we're going to do here, we're going to take a short break, play a couple of commercials, and we'll be right back to talk more about Alabama-Georgia in the national championship game. And we have some moments from our buy or sell segment. You're listening to Sports Roundtable Best of Volume 1.
What's up? This your man, D-Will the Coach, here on behalf of Real Talk Tees. Real Talk Tees is for the players, geniuses, and bosses. For those who hustle, for the fresh, and for the iconic. Real Talk Tees is urban, affordable, vintage t-shirts to help you express yourself. So visit realtalktees.bigcartel.com to order yours today. So how about this? You got a specific mood in mind? Custom orders are available also to help you and yours stand out. So visit realtalktees.bigcartel.com, where what's real lasts forever.
Are you looking for a new, pre-owned, or used car to get you around the city or simply from point A to point B? Look no further. Jay's Used Cars is the place to be. Jay believes your job is your credit, and no matter what your situation is, Jay will get you in a car. Visit Jay's at 3820 Lawrenceville Highway in Tucker and mention Sports Roundtable, get a 10% discount. Go to jaysusedcars.com to check out the inventory. Jay's Used Cars, where they stack them deep and sell them cheap. Sports Roundtable.
Oh, you know, UCF, that's cool. It's a nice little story, but it's being the tallest midget at the party. I mean, it really don't mean nothing.
It means absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Only on WWE, The Real 1100 AM.
Welcome back to Sports Roundtable Best of Volume 1. I'm G Money, the man behind the glass. And we've got some clips for you to give the tenants. That's what we call our fans, tenants, because we are penthouse people. We're giving our tenants some clips of the best moments from Sports Roundtable. And we're going to continue with our Georgia-Alabama National Championship conversation. I mean, we're in Atlanta. The game was here. We have Coach D. Will, the college football champion of the world. His beloved Crimson Tide, of course, won the national championship. And we're going to look forward to what's in store for both teams.
They just wasn't prepared for Tua in the passing.
They
as
ran
far
the
as
same stuff, though, because maybe not the same stuff, but what I'm saying is the first drive, Jalen missed a touchdown.
Yeah, he did.
On the one he scrambled out and got the first down, if he doesn't feel – he wasn't no pressure. He just took off. If he waits, Calvin Ridley ran the post, was wide open.
Yeah.
And then he missed Ridley again on a corner. So I understand Kirby got a lot of, you know, goodwill in the first half, But by rights, I mean, Jalen Hurts missed touchdowns. He missed open receivers.
Jalen Hurts was just not on his game.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama could have been ahead going into half, is what I'm saying.
Should have been.
You see what I'm saying? So, Kirby having that 13-point lead, they could have probably been up more if that block punt wasn't called back. They probably would have scored on that. They were in the red zone with the block punt.
That should have never happened because it was actually a false start.
Yeah, actually it was a false start.
I hear you. But they didn't call that point. They called offside.
Right, I got you.
But, what you know, there were so many different bad calls in this game. The officiating, like I said in the beginning, officiating along with the swings of momentum, along with the big call to take out the quarterback and put in a double. It was just a great game overall. Mm-hmm. I think you take the good with the bad, wrap it up and say, great pass.
It is what it is.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just a great
because
game.
On that, because after the touchdown when Bama got back in the game and then Georgia came right back and went for 80, he stepped out of bounds. His foot was on the white. His heel was on the white.
I think you had to make sure, though, D. That you couldn't say conclusive. Did you think?
Here's my point.
I couldn't really tell.
Here's my point. If there's no beads came up and you didn't see any green in between his heel and the field. If you don't see any green, that is more than I paused it and zoomed in.
Yeah,
he was on the white.
If they would have called him out, I'd say he was out. If they call him in, you see, that's what we were talking about calls early this year when we were talking about it. If it's not to me, I didn't see it. When the way I saw it,
if
I couldn't
not
tell.
100%.
It wasn't 100%. It was still a gray area.
If we look at it together and we don't come up with the same answer, it's not conclusive. Mm.
Well, to me, it was conclusive as heck because I saw his heel on the white. I didn't see any green in between it. And when you're in the green, you see the beads come up. When he stepped down, no black beads came up. So I'm like, what else do you need? That's what replay is for. You're able to zoom in and look. When they zoomed in, you saw clearly there was no green in between the white and the heel. It was just a bad officiating game.
Yeah, the Big Ten. So the Big Ten officials doesn't help the Big Ten conference. And so my question would be, what does this say about the SEC now?
It says what we always say. It's the best conference in the land. You know, it like you can say, you know, we thought it was going to be people were going to hate because it was a regional game, okay? Like it was basically the SEC championship part duh.
Yeah.
And I did that for the LSU, you know, SEC. It was the SEC championship part two. So because that's what we figured we would have saw in Atlanta 2 weeks ago or a little bit over a month ago. But it just shows that regardless of from top to bottom, if the SEC is the strongest conference, we have the best teams in the nation.
Exactly.
Like, I don't care who stepped on that field with either Alabama or Georgia Monday night. They were losing that game. They were going to lose that game. I don't care if it was Ohio State, Oklahoma, whoever it may have been, whoever you put in that situation, the SEC was going to come out on top. So it basically tells us the SEC is the best conference in the country.
So this is the million-dollar question. Well, how much Kirby make?
I think he made
six.
Six.
It's going
to
go up.
Okay. It's about to go way up.
About to go up. So this is the big question. Was it more Kirby this year, or was it the seniors?
I think it was a combination.
That made him successful?
Yes.
I think it's a combination. I think the seniors coming back was
because
big.
Because Lorenzo Carter,
yeah.
Bellamy, Raekwon.
It's 31 seniors. Just keep
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
it's 31
exactly.
seniors.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Exactly. So, but these are the ones that came back to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? These are the notables.
Right.
And hopefully 24 wasn't one of them. Because he just, I mean, well, maybe 14 because Paris is the one who was getting toasted all night. But anyway, was it the seniors or was it just Kirby?
I think it was kind of like a perfect storm, too, though. You got to look at they were in the right side of the conference also.
Okay.
Let's be real. I mean, they were in the right side of the conference. But they did what they were supposed to do.
Right.
You know, they won those games. Winning at Notre Dame catapulted their season. Because it gave them respectability. And I think it gave the team a belief that they could do something special. I think that more than anything made everything say, okay, maybe we got something here. You know, and I think they became a better football team than they even thought they were going to be. I'm sure they had aspirations, but winning that game kind of, you can tell it kind of fueled them the rest of the year.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens now with these recruiting classes. But Kirby has injected a life into Georgia's program, no doubt. When he first, last year, I was a little hard on him because I thought he was like more of still the coordinator. And I might be putting the cart before the horse and putting him in that spot. But hey, second year, he's in the national championship game. Got to give him his prop.
Overtime in the national championship game.
Right? Yeah.
And I second that. I believe it's, I'm going to give a little bit more credit to Kirby because all these players, like we said, it's 31 seniors. Mm-hmm. And the key players on this team are seniors. And Mark Richt was unable to get it done with the same class. All right, so
that's a good point.
So we have to give Kirby credit for being able to bring these guys together, get them to buy in, and then get them to do what they're supposed to do on the field. Lorenzo Carter got in trouble under Mark Richt. He got in he was getting suspended. Mm-hmm. Things of that.
Bellamy had a little off the field also.
Exactly. How many suspensions did Kirby have this year? None that were notable. You see what I'm saying? So he changed the atmosphere of the program.
Yeah.
That was an off season.
No, he had
come on, man.
That was the second time, wasn't it?
Yeah. Listen, we're talking about weed. Weed should be legal anyway.
Y'all know how it is in Athens. Yeah. They have like some outdated laws. The police are looking for these players.
Come on, man.
They're looking for
them. Weed should be legal anyway, so I'm not even going to hold that against him. But what I'm
saying. So he get a pass by D. Will.
He get a pass. He can't get a pass from me. But I'm just saying. Kirby took this program that Mark Richt had. He took these great players that Mark Richt was able to recruit and get to come to school there, and he was able to do exactly what he was supposed to do with them. And now, with the recruiting class that he has coming in, led by the number one overall recruit in Justin Fields, who may be the starting quarterback next year.
And he would have put a little more pressure on that edge.
Exactly. Because he's a lot more athletic.
On those read options, exactly.
So, like, Kirby has built the right foundation. And, like I say, they little brother right now.
Yeah.
But now, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah.
I promise you I do. But, you know, it's been since 80, mm-hmm. right? Since Georgia won that championship.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, some would be reluctant to say, was it just the newness of changing the coach? And then the next year, you lose all these seniors,
but
the only thing that you got to ride on is momentum. Are you that guy to bring? No, you now have 31 seniors next year. You've already got to the dance, so now the expectations goes up. So can you survive this as Kirby?
What, remember when I said about recruiting is a big part of it?
Right.
He has some recruits coming in, and see, that was the difference that I tweeted before the game, watching the field view. I love when they do big games on ESPN where you get different aspects, where they different channels, they'll show field level, they'll show this or whatever.
Megacast.
And watching them warm up, when you watch the linebackers from Bama and the defensive line, Georgia may have had 30% that type of athlete, and Bama had them in droves.
Right.
You know, 99, 94. They just looked different.
DeRon Payne and Raquan Davis.
Right. When you watch them play, number 9 on the defense, was it the Hand?
Yeah, Deshaun Hand.
They just looked different. And if Kirby can get those numbers, he can compete.
But so you saying
I'm saying the
depth.
The depth is the cookie. Biggest thing.
Okay.
Exactly. Because at the running back position, they were comparable.
I'm just asking the question that the Georgia people go ask.
Right, and that's the thing. He's got to get depth.
Okay.
He's got to be able to sustain injury. Mm-hmm. See, like I said, I told you, there was no other team in pro football or college football, Canadian League,
facts.
High school,
facts.
That could have withstood losing the amount of players that Bama did. And still win. Mm-hmm. To get to the national championship game, let alone win it. So that's the thing that you have to take into fact. It's the numbers.
Yeah. Georgia fans, I need them to temper it a little bit. I expect Georgia to take not much, but slightly a step back next year.
But you understand the concern.
Oh, I understand it without a doubt because they're ahead of schedule. Let's keep it real. Georgia's a little bit ahead of schedule. Granted, they had – Granted, they had 31 seniors this year, so they were an experienced team, but they were a little ahead of schedule with Kirby. So I believe they're going to take a slight step back next year. I still think they're going to win the East because the East is so down.
Right.
But to say that they can get back to the playoff and get back to a national championship game, that's going to be hard because, like you say, they're losing a lot of that depth, and the depth that they have coming in is young talent. It's unproven talent that hadn't played on this stage, hadn't been there before. So give them a year or two. I really believe they're going to be something to reckon with when this number one recruiting class that they have right now comes in.
Become juniors.
Oh, my goodness. They're going to be something to be reckoned with.
One thing to consider, though, is that with this run that they made, their starting quarterback was a freshman. They had Swift, another freshman. So they're going to be, if Fromm keeps his job next year, but they have the experience of going through this. Mm-hmm. And also with Riley Ridley making an impact in the game.
He balled out.
He played well.
Those guys can, even as sophomores, they have the experience of making this national championship run. So they could – I do understand it could be a slight step back just because of all the players they're losing.
Like he said, a depth standpoint.
Yeah. If they can get the numbers, that's the thing. That's the thing right there. And they got to get 2 and 3 players like Roquan. They need two. They need 3 Roquan.
Yeah, exactly.
Alabama got 3 Deshaun hands. They got 2
Raekwon Davis.
They got all of them.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? You go to the bullpen and go get a freshman quarterback and come in and lead you to a national championship.
With you know all I mean? Freshman just, wide receivers.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. It's all about the numbers and kids that are not afraid of the big stage because they performed on the biggest stage that we have in college football. They came out like, hey, this is what I do.
But hey, listen, we just know that Georgia and Alabama is about to run the SEC.
It
because
sure look like
because in crunch time, it was 9 true freshmen on both sides of the football. 9 true freshmen that were the keys because that last in overtime, that when they got the field goal, you know who the back that was in? It was Swift. It was not Sony Michel or Nick Chubb.
It was freshman.
Jake Fromm's a freshman, and then Alabama with Henry Ruggs, who we had on this show prior to the season.
Absolutely.
Henry Ruggs, we had Devontae Smith, we have Jared Judy, and I'm gonna tell y'all something. Nobody will ever say anything about this play, but on the mad scramble that Tua Tagovailoa had, mm-hmm. where he had the Houdini play, do you know what sprung him? It was and it should have been a flag. It was a crack back block by Jared Judy, number 1.
Yep.
He laid him out, which gave him the area to get the first down.
And Roquan actually got held, but it was in a scramble play. It was in a scramble play, so it didn't get seen. So,
but I'm gonna end the Bama.
Should have made the tackle.
I'm gonna end the Jaws and the Alabama talking. We're gonna move on to some NFL real quick. I'm so impressed with this. It's like Nick Saban said, y'all haven't seen all the freshmen that I have on my team. I'm going to go ahead and put them on display, even though I'm down 13 net.
Yep.
Trust.
Because I can tell you this. I can guarantee you half the Alabama fans probably can't even tell you who caught the touchdown pass to win the game.
I don't know. We got some loyal people over there, but them folks know
everybody. Well, the bandwaggers did.
Okay, yeah. Dude, now, they don't.
They don't know who caught the touchdown pass to win the game.
But one other thing before you move. One key thing they have is that in blowout wins, they're able to put these folks in there and get experience.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? That helps a lot. They played a lot against Vandy.
They did. A whole bunch.
They played a lot against probably Tennessee.
Ole Miss.
And Ole Miss. And so it's not, you know, when they say, well, you ran the score up. You got to get these people experience.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Tagovailoa played a lot against Vandy.
He played a lot.
You see what I'm saying?
And made similar plays.
So that comes in handy when they needed him.
And let's not forget.
You got to let him play. I hate when they talk about they ran the score up.
Oh, man, get out of here.
Why don't you let these people not
this
do,
football,
that, do
man.
That job?
Yeah. And you got to understand, Devontae Smith, he had 6 catches on the season, right? 1 catch that night. But people tend to forget. In our toughest game of the year against Mississippi State on the road, guess who caught the winning touchdown? Devontae Smith.
You better tell me Devontae Smith.
Devontae Smith.
It was a great national championship game, wasn't it? Unless you're a Georgia Bulldog fan. Sorry for you. But we're going to move on to the best of Volume 1 of our newest segment called Buy or Sell, led by yours truly. in which I find some interesting sports stories that may not be covered by the mainstream media, but they can strike up a conversation. So in this first one, we'll talk about robot umpires. And that's all I'm going to say. I felt like I didn't need to do much research for this first one just because of the concept, just the phrase itself did not make any sense to me. So the Independent Baseball League previously experimented with the pitch clock, which Major League Baseball adopted, and also with the replay system. There's talks to use robot umpires. So I'll start with our lead baseball analyst, H.O. Do you buy or sell robot umpires?
I'm selling. I don't need an iRobot to tell me your ball and strike. And actually, as a kid, I was fascinated on the umpire's third strike call. How they ring them up on the third strike. That was like a highlight. So Frank Pulley, Dutch Rennert, you know, those umpires back in the day.
They put on the show
for you. So baseball is already trending down as y'all turn up y'all nose when I talk about the Braves. So it's no reason to trend it down even more if you're going to put a robot in places of the umpires. Now, I don't agree with, especially today, with that third strike call on Dansby. Don't agree with it, but this is what I grew up watching. This is how I grew up knowing about the baseball. Let's not complicate this even more because the ratings will go down even further. So I'm selling it.
I also wondered is this robot going to be behind the catcher on the field? Because I feel like there's a bad call and then the batter has a weapon.
Yeah.
You're beating the robot up.
Hancock, what do you think?
Man, I think I'm selling, man. This sounds like the Jetsons or something. That doesn't even sound like baseball. I mean, to me, sports they're getting so technical and so, you know, technology driven that you're taking the human error out of it. Right. You know, let's just, you know, my hashtag this past week, just ball. No matter what the sport is, for some reason, these sports have been around for I don't know how many years. And you can't go back and relive moments. You can't say, well, that should have been a touchdown. You can't go back and say, Dez Bryant, now that was a touchdown. It's over.
Right.
Let's just go, you know, keep going with what we got. You're not going to get everything right. You just move on from it and play through it. We're taught that from day one playing sports.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the thing. Look, you got to play through it. And if you get some bad ones, you just hope that they even out and you keep playing. So all this tech, I'm selling, G.
Right. I'll ask you, Jamie, what do you think?
I'm buying. I'm buying. This is why.
Okay.
Baseball needs some shakeup. You know, baseball needs something fresh. And what I mean by that is, I know I'm kidding around a little bit, but it's more so they were analyzing just what they're taking out of baseball right now. They're shifting. They're taking out the bunt. All the skills we grew up with that you saw that had to be implemented, the hit and runs and things of that nature, it is deadening in baseball. So, hey, add a robot in it. We got a bunch of gamers now. They're adding that to sports. Why not? It may have some attraction to the sport. And that's the only reason. I'll be a contrarian just for this purpose.
Okay. All
right, Jay?
It's a bad idea. Over the years, Major League Baseball, they've made some dumb decisions, and I think this would be among one of the worst. And reason being, baseball is already perceived as a very boring and, for lack of a better word, just slow game. It's very hard on the eye. It's a hard game to watch. And I think if you start to include robots, and I get that you want to improve the accuracy of the calls. I get that. That makes perfect sense. But seeing a robot behind the plate, it just sounds like a pretty bad idea. And plus, you're going to take jobs away from, I don't know how many umpires work in the MLB, but you're taking jobs away from, what, 60 to, union, though, man. Yeah, a strong union. So, I mean, they're going to fight this thing tooth and nail. The MLB, I don't know what they're doing at this point. I just think Major League Baseball, they have to come up with real, legitimate solutions that's going to, you know, actually spice up the game some.
2-point home runs.
Maybe. I mean.
Late innings.
I don't know. I don't know what they need.
Some.
Yeah, I don't know what they need, but this is not
necessary. There was, I think the independent league is still experimenting with it, or somewhere in the minor leagues, to where in extra innings, you start with a runner on second.
Yeah, international rule, like travel ball.
But what if the umpire battery dies while the pitch is coming?
That's what I was thinking. Like, is the robot gonna throw people out?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
he'll probably be solar powered. he'll probably be powered by the sun and the UV lights.
So do you buy or sell robot umpires? I'm still selling. We don't need any human on robot crime out here, and they're already coming to get us. So anyway, we're going to move on to another item on the docket that came up, and it comes from the soccer world. One of Brazil's most celebrated players, Ronaldinho, has an interesting relationship arrangement. All right, so first item on the docket comes from the soccer world. And let me bring it up here. There we go. So if anyone's familiar with the former soccer star Ronaldinho out of Brazil, he's been in the news recently as it has been rumored that he is going to marry not one, but two women in his native Brazil. And he's rumored to be tying the knot with the two women sometime in August this year. And he's been reportedly living harmoniously with Priscilla Coelho and Beatriz Souza in his $5 million mansion in Rio de Janeiro. He has come out to deny those claims. He says, I'm not marrying two women. Don't believe everything you read. But someone who is as big as a star as Ronaldinho, and I'll start with you, Jay. Do you buy these relationship goals?
I don't buy the relationship goals, but I do want to congratulate Ronaldinho. I mean, if he does accomplish this, I think this is an amazing feat for him. I don't see why he has to marry the two, because if they're both there now, obviously they're comfortable with that arrangement. I mean, why just not have due to Lou Williams, just have two living girlfriends. So, but you know, I'm happy for him. I'm proud. Congratulations. I don't know him, but I don't know what these women look like, but I'm sure they probably look amazing. But you know, congrats to him.
All right. Now, also, you want to include that when he goes to different events, he does bring both of them. When he travels, he does bring both of them, and he also buys them the same presents.
Wow. And I guess one good thing is this, I'm sure this guy's very rich, and he has the money to do this. An average guy like me, I couldn't do it, but congrats to him. I mean, he's doing his thing, and I'm sure he's making a lot of people upset, but yeah, I don't buy the arrangement. Why, I'm selling it. Why just not, you know, have a Lou Williams type situation?
All right, I'll move over to you, H.O.
I think I'm gonna buy this. Not that this is something that I would do, but if this is, obviously him and Lou Williams, I had a conversation. And if this is a committed or a consensus or a consented marriage with all three parties, then, you know, why not go for it? Where is he from? Brazil?
He's from Brazil.
Okay, well, yeah. Surprised it ain't three.
Well,
I mean, as far as I'm concerned.
Speaking of a third.
I'm surprised it ain't
three. When he was at the Rio Carnival,
this year. He had a VIP box, and it was an event, so he took both women with him. But an ex-girlfriend showed up, and it was reported that she could not hide her jealousy. Wow. What's also interesting is that both women that he's with are from the same city that he had previously played for and won a championship for. And they are friends. The two women are friends. And they both have engagement rings.
Mm. Salute!
Wow.
I'm buying it. I'm buying this all the way. Salute.
All right, Hancock.
No, I'm selling. Next question.
All right. Let's move on. Two things there. One, I think Lou Williams is down to just one girlfriend now. So maybe he's changed his ways. Who knows? And secondly, I hope I didn't get Hancock in trouble with that question. He did give the right answer, so he should be okay. Moving to the next item we have on the docket. Yes, we are aware that LeBron James has signed with the Los Angeles Lakers, and his new teammate, current teammate, Lonzo Ball, may have potentially ruined the entire thing. At least that's what we thought when he put out a certain diss track. Next story we have with the docket has a sour clip, so I'm going to play that.
B. Jones! Who are you without ZO2? Just another dude with a bunch of tattoos. You ain't got no shoe. Nike wins, cools lose. Claiming that I can't shoot, but all these words is hitting you. Boy, you talking crazy. Why you trying to play me? You ain't on my level. You ain't famous as my baby. I'm working out daily, but I ain't posting it. And I would never stop a workout just to post a pic. You let them gas you up, thinking that you can't be touched. Coming from the outskirts of Flint, boy, you ain't tough. Big baller brand, getting brand. Look who's just getting crumbs. We thumbing through that money. Look at y'all, y'all playing with your thumbs. Don't know who your daddy is. Well, your ass is getting some. We both taking shots. The only difference, you ain't hitting none. Usually do this bitch for fun, but trust me, boy, I'm not the one. If you the bullet, I'm the gun. If you the pot, I'm cooking some. You won't smoke, you can get it. Dressing for attention.
All right, so that was Los Angeles Laker guard Lonzo Ball putting out a diss track against his own teammate, Kyle Kuzma.
Wow.
His own teammate. This may have been in response to a video on Bleacher Report in which Kyle Kuzma made a video basically hosting a player haters ball just to roast Lonzo Ball. So I'll start with you, Jay. Is this Laker beef or tofu?
I think it's tofu. If I'm Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka, the president and GM of the Lakers, I'm pretty pissed because this is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And I give Lonzo his credit. He took some funny shots at Kyle Kuzma, but some of it was inaccurate, especially the shooting part. And I mean, you're talking about your teammate, the guy who made, was he first NBA, first team,
all rookie? Over.
Yeah, and did Lonzo even make a team?
He was the second team.
Okay, he was the second team. But Lonzo missed, I won't say significant, but he did miss a lot of games throughout the season. His shot is still questionable, so why he felt the need to point out that Kyle Kuzma could shoot, I don't know why. Maybe he was talking about himself, but I just think if you're Lonzo Ball, I think you have better things to worry about. This is an important summer for him. Instead of being in the studio, you need to be on the court putting up some shots. And especially, you need to be working on that jumper, that cross-the-body jump shot, whatever it is. He should probably be more so focused on that instead of sending diss tracks at Kyle Kuzma.
Hancock, these are your youngins.
Yeah. That's a shame, man. I know Magic's kind of looking and saying, man, I might have made a mistake. But, you know, I thought it was kind of flaky when he says, you the bullet, I'm the gun. Well, we know he's not going to hit nobody.
Right. Nobody.
So that was the worst part of the rap for me right there. The other part, when he said about, you know, Kuzma's dad said, you don't even know your dad.
whatever, however he said it.
You don't know who your dad is.
Yeah, that was a little touchy. So, you know, I thought it was a fake beef. I thought it was just them having fun until, you know, this national media and the circus got around it. But me hearing the rap for the first time, that was the first time I've heard it. Sounded a little serious.
So you going beef?
Yeah, I think it's beef. You talk about someone's dad like that? Come on. That was a serious shot.
I'm with you.
When you start bringing kids and parents and things like that in it, to me, it gets more of a beef than it. You said tofu or beef. I'm buying beef with the dad thing. That to me, you know, that kind of crossed the line.
All right. And if you're watching us on Facebook Live, let us know if you think that it's beef or tofu. And H.O., what do you think?
I'm going to go tofu because I think that the Lonzo and his dad are basically they are Hollywood anyway. So I think it's kind of like anything goes. They got to play with each other this year. I just think it was just two young rookies not really having anything else to do. So I think it was basically tofu. I don't think it's any kind of real beef or whatever the case may be. So, yeah. So now I guess maybe this is a play on Pusha T and
Drake.
And Drake.
Yeah, I guess so. It's definitely not how you win offseason. I mean, drafting free agency if you have to come up with this.
No doubt about it.
Yeah,
it's
a bad start.
Exactly.
So it ended up not being a deterrent at all for LeBron coming to Los Angeles, but I do think he is the only adult on that team. So that will do it for the first hour of Sports Roundtable Best of Volume 1. We have a lot more to come. We have some interviews. We have some moments from our lifestyle segment, I Hate It When, or the Fun Bag, or something that we need to get off our chest. So a lot more to come. Stay tuned.
You're tuned into WWE Peekville, AM 1100.
The opinions expressed during the sponsored programs on this station are strictly those of the program hosts, guests, and callers and are not necessarily those of Beasley Broadcast Group, this station, its staff, other advertisers, or agencies.
Have you been looking for a radio station that gives you sports?
I don't believe it! Oh. It's a touchdown!
Entertainment?
Are you not entertained?
And other special interest talk shows?
Well, isn't that special?
All on one app?
Yo, that's dope. What app is that?
It's the Real 1100 AM app for WWE. Grab it for free in your Google Play or Apple App Store today.
The work never stops at Bo Bell Basketball Academy. Or more specifically, the feet work never stops at Bo Bell Basketball Academy. For boys and girls ages 6 and up, Atlanta's own Bo Bell has played and coached basketball all around the world and is here to share his philosophies. Specifically, how footwork is the foundation to be a complete basketball player. Visit CoachBoBell.com for details about upcoming camps or call 770-912-4104 for more information. Bo Bell Basketball Academy, where footwork is key.
Sports Roundtable.
What would you do if you had a twin? What prank would you do if you had a twin?
Oh, it'd be cool if vacation time, you need a couple of days. Hey, look, bro, give me the day. Give me this weekend, whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
That would be cool. The wives would probably be in trouble. I wouldn't do it to wives, but the girlfriends would be in trouble.
Only on WWE, The Real 1100 AM.
Breezy?
Yeah.
Looks like they back for a fifth season, man.
Who that?
Sports Roundtable.
Who?
S-R-T.
Yeah.
Crew.
Whoa.
S-R-S-R-S-R-S-R-T. Yeah. They got that realness flowing in they DNA. Uh-huh. Damn you lame if you ain't tuned to SRT today. Boom. H-O got that payload when he say so. What you betting on? Okay. Don't get mad at me on fantasy. Break up Kyrie LeBron. Oh, no. I be smooth as sports superhero Hancock in the mix. Deal with roll tie forever. Real talk, you know who he gon' pick. See where I be with SRT. Behind the glass, that G-Money. They with a strong, I never lose. Six man elite, that's Jay Smooth.
All you other sports radio shows, it's fake news.
believe that. Turn up your radios, cause it's time for SRT Radio.
Welcome back to Sports Roundtable Best of Volume 1. I'm G Money, the man behind the glass, giving you clips of the best moments from Sports Roundtable. Been on the air for almost 2 years now, and this is being done because the station is closed and we do the show on Wednesdays. And it's the 4th of July, Independence Day. I hope everyone's having a good time, staying safe, staying away from fireworks. You know who we're talking to. But anyway, we're going to get into the second hour here, and we got a couple of interviews that we're going to play here. James Forrest, legend of Georgia Tech basketball. He hit a famous game-winning shot against USC in the NCAA tournament back in 1992. He was actually a freshman when he made that shot. Sophomore year, had a great sophomore season, was MVP of the ACC tournament. People expected him to go into the draft, and he didn't. And here's the story of why.
So you had a monster of a sophomore year. 19.5 average points per game. MVP of the ACC tournament. I don't know a lot of people who can say they beat Duke, Clemson, and North Carolina back to back to back. And then you decided to come back to school. Everybody want to know. I mean, that's the first question they ask. Why did you come back? Because projected top 10 pick.
You know what's so weird about that whole situation? First of all, coming out wasn't even a big thing back during that time.
I agree.
You know, during that time, coming out of school was because, you know, you needed money. You know, kids wanted to take care of their mom, whatever the situation may be. That wasn't my situation coming out of Tech during that time. But what was crazy was that after we lost that game, the rumor started coming that Bobby was leaving. So we didn't know anything about it. So Travis and I were looking at each other like, what do you mean Bobby's leaving? Like, where the hell, where is he going? You know, like, where is he going? So they were like, he's supposed to be going to South Carolina. We were like, yeah, whatever. And then while we were in Arizona at the time, I'll never forget this. Brian Gumbel came up to me. And we was in the gift store. And he said, James, are you going to leave, right? I'm like, leave where? He's like, you're going to leave and come out. I'm like, come out of the leave Tech to go to the draft? He's like, yeah. I was like, nah, not even. Mm-mm. Because I was pissed off not thinking and realizing, okay, I just got MVP of the ACC tournament, but we just got our ass kicked by Southern.
Yes.
Yes.
So and it was like, you know, and for me, and you know, during that time, man, it was a competitive thing. It was like, man, I gotta come back and you know,
redeem myself.
So it was more of that. And I was in the gift shop, and Brian was like, you know, you might want to come out, man. He was like, you know, Quinn Buckner is the coach of the Mavericks and he loves you. Like, Quinn Buckner don't know me. I'm young. I'm 19. I'm still pissed because, you know, right. We just lost. And lo and behold, man, that draft, who did Dallas take? Who did they take in the draft in 94 draft? At the fourth pick.
Jamal Mashburn. Yes.
Master
Mash. Yes, that's right.
Jamal
Mashburn.
And the problem that they had is they, you know, it was, yeah. They said that our game was similar. I was more of an inside game. Mash was more of a perimeter game.
I was
more of a power player inside. He was more of a finesse player. But they were saying that our game was similar or whatnot during that time. And so they end up taking Mash. And then like I said, it wasn't about leaving. And once we got back to Atlanta, I left and went to Orlando. And during the time, like I said, Dennis Scott's a big brother of mine. So right. I went down there and, you know, that's where I would spend my summers. And I went down there and Bobby called. James. It was maybe 1 o'clock in the morning, man. I mean, you know. James, God bless you. I love you. I'm leaving. Bye.
Wow.
Like, what
Wow.
And I was, you know, I was beside myself because we really didn't know. And still, once again, leaving wasn't an option.
Right.
You know, leaving wasn't an option because, like I said, it wasn't big. It didn't really, you know, leaving early didn't become big until probably the year I graduated in 95, because that year, that's when you had KG, who came out his first year.
Right.
That's when you had Stack and Sheet, who left after their sophomore year. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's when guys really started leaving, was in 95. You know, that's when it became a big thing.
Would James Forrest have been a better fit on the Dallas Mavericks in 1993 with Jimmy Jackson? Who knows? We'll never know. They may not have drafted Jason Kidd the next year, even though they would still technically be the 3Js. We talked to another member of that 1993 NBA draft class, James Hollywood Robinson from the University of Alabama, and he'll tell us about his journey to the NBA and how he impressed a teenage D. Will.
And on the phone, we have Jackson, Mississippi native, 1993 first round draft pick, 21st overall by the Portland Trail Blazers, Alabama, and now recently enshrined SEC legend, James Hollywood Robinson on the phone. What's up, Hollywood?
Man, not a thing. What's going on, fellas?
What's up, Hollywood?
What's up? What's up?
Hey, now tell me, what's happening?
I like the way you read that off, man. That's a good intro. That's a very good intro, baby.
Well, you know, when we got a legend on the phone, you got to make sure we give up all the accolades. You know what I'm saying?
And that's right, baby. That's right.
Hollywood, now let's talk about this, man. Last week, speaking of the SEC tournament last week and you becoming an SEC legend, they honored you last week in St. Louis. Talk about that a little bit.
Man, I felt like I was still playing, man. It was a great honor, man. They flew me in. They took care of everything. Mm. And they just recognized me for, you know, all the things that I'd done at, you know, Alabama, which was good, too, because Saxton played his butt off, man, and he broke two of my records that was there for 28 years, man.
Wow. How does that make you feel that Colin went out there and broke your record in front of you on the big stage?
I'm telling you, it felt good. Everybody kept looking at me like I was cheering. They was like, you know he's about to break your record. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. Records are meant to be broken. That's right. You something to strive for.
Exactly. And let's talk about that a little bit. Your time at Bama under Wimp. And you had a lot of great moments while you were there. Y'all had some good tournament runs yourself. So what were some of your best memories while playing at Alabama?
Going to the Sweet 16 2 years in a row. And just being in St. Louis, it brought back a lot of memories because we won the SEC two times, I mean, back-to-back, my freshman and sophomore year. So it brought back a whole bunch of good memories of the SEC tournament. But just playing in Coleman Coliseum, period, man, with the plaid on the floor, Wimp had the plaid on, and it was just a great growing-up experience.
You played with Latrell Sprewell, Robert Horry, and Jason Caffey at Alabama. But you was drafted in a class in 93 that could arguably be one of the best class in the history of basketball, with Chris Webber, Sean Bradley, Penny Hardaway, Jamal Mashburn, Isaiah Ryder, Allen Houston, Calbert Chaney. Just talk about you kind of looking back at the class that you was actually drafted in and drafted in the first round with that class.
It was exciting then. It was exciting, but a little disappointing because I thought I was going to go a little higher. I'm being honest with you. I probably would have came out of school a year early.
Yeah, I see. And then you had Rodney Rogers in that class. Lindsey Hunt. Actually, Lindsey, y'all played in the backcourt together in high school. Is that correct?
We sure did.
Yeah.
We sure did.
One more question before I turn it back over to D. Will is, you was honored as a SEC legendary, but you also play under legendary coach Whip Sanders. I don't think he gets enough credit as far as what he had brought to the South as far as coaching and his style and things of that nature. Can you talk about playing for a legendary coach?
Man, it was an awesome experience. Two reasons. He made me a better player on defense in order to, you know, make it to the next level and play in the NBA, and also instill is more than life in basketball, which is being a good person and a good man and do what you said you're going to do. High on that, man.
Mm-hmm.
Real high on that.
That's what's up. Now, Hollywood, before I get to my next question, I am going to have to tell a story. So brace yourself. And I want to know if you remember this, because I remember, man, it was, I think it was around 1995. You were coming out of your second year in the league. My brother was a freshman. They were living in Bryce Lawn on campus in Bama. And you came by, and this is my first time ever, sitting in a black 600 Mercedes Benz. Let me tell you something. I was sitting in the back seat. So I get out the car. Guess what he tells me? What Hollywood says to me, "Hey, you ain't got to close that door. Just push it up. It's going to close itself." Hey, people don't understand. That name Hollywood just went on the basketball court. You are a personality in itself. And people got to understand that. So let everybody know, man, what brought out your personality that not only off the court, but it bled onto the court where it made you a better player on and off the court?
Just good family value, man. I had a good family upbringing. And to be honest, that's all it was. Upbringing. And you know, some of my friends tell me, man, if you could, Hollywood, you would have took the whole neighborhood with you, man.
So one thing that James Forrest and James Robinson both have in common is they both play basketball overseas. That just proves that basketball is an international sport. But are basketball players among the most famous in the world? Sort of. Here's a moment from our buy or sell segment in which ESPN gave their Fame 100, the 100 most famous athletes in the world. And you'd be surprised at what we found. The Four Letter Network released a list of the 100 most famous athletes in the world. And this was based on a criteria of the search score as far as how often their name is searched, how much they make in endorsements, and their social media following. So I'll give you guys the top 10 really quick here. I know number one is Cristiano Ronaldo. Number two was LeBron James. Number three is Lionel Messi. Number four is Neymar. Number five, Roger Federer. Number six, Tiger Woods. Number seven, Kevin Durant. Number eight, Rafael Nadal. Number nine, Steph Curry. And number 10, Phil Mickelson.
Wow.
Don't you know this? There are two sports that were not represented at all on this list this year.
And I'm mad about it.
And that would be baseball and hockey. did not have any players in the top 100.
I'm mad.
Did you name a football? Never mind.
There are a few NFL players. The highest ranked woman is Serena Williams. She's number 12 overall. There are 10 cricket players on the list.
Oh my God, stop it.
The top boxer is Floyd Mayweather at number 14. The top MMA fighter is Conor McGregor at number 18. He's actually the only MMA fighter on the list. And the highest ranked NFL player is Tom Brady at number 38. The highest non-quarterback ranked on the list is Odell Beckham Jr. at number 53. And there were some interesting choices. Like, I'm not sure how Derrick Rose was on the list at all, but he is number 36.
Wow.
So he is more famous around the world than Tom Brady.
Wow.
That's
never,
crazy.
Never would have thought.
And the top ranked golfer, aside from Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, is Rory McIlroy at number 15. As I said, there are no hockey players, no baseball players. There were actually no hockey or baseball players on last year's list. So I'll start with you, Jay. Do you think there are baseball players that should be on this list? Or do you buy or sell baseball players actually should be on the list?
I'm actually selling it. And reason being is baseball, it's a sport that does have some global relevance. They're doing well in Japan and, you know, in most of Latin America. But I think as a sport, baseball tends to be a bit conservative. They tend to be behind the eight ball progressively. So, you know, I don't have a problem with the list. I actually like the entirety of the top 10. It was made up of all soccer players, basketball players, and golfers, which are, you know, sports that transcend, or which are transcended sports worldwide. So I don't have a problem with it all. I know HM3, he's a big baseball fan, but honestly, I mean, outside of maybe what, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, I don't know if Ohtani, I don't know if he could have made the list. I mean, it was probably made after his debut, but honestly, I don't have a problem with it. I'm selling the I'm buying the baseball players and hockey players and whoever else was left off. I'm buying them not being on the list.
All right, HO?
I'm selling. The sport that I grew up playing, that I love the most, there's no way that even if Derek Jeter is retired, he should have made the list. Bryce Harper definitely should make the list. Mike Trout should have made the list. And I got a problem with Serena not being in the top 10. I mean, if all these other sports, soccer, cricket, and things of that nature are across the globe, I mean, baseball is too. You know, so yeah, I'm down for the baseball players being on the list. It's almost as if baseball does not exist, but it is probably one of the most profitable sports that you can play in today's game that can last a very, very, very long time, as you've seen Derek Jeter play over 20 years with the Yankees. So, yeah, I'm down for the baseball players being on the list.
Hancock?
I'm buying, man. It is what it is. Baseball, I mean, it's a game that my grandfather and all, they were very excited about. To be honest, in the black community, baseball and boxing were the two sports that the older my people, like my grandfather and whatever, they all, you listened to those on the radio back in the day. And I can remember sitting out on the porch with him on summer nights and some afternoons listening to baseball or whatever. But, you know, it's kind of lost, it lost the draw of our community, just being honest. You know, basketball and football really are the two sports that draw our younger generation. I think it's they're more, we're in a microwave society, the fast, something happening.
Right.
And baseball is such a slower sport, like golf. If you don't play golf, it's just, or if Tiger's not there, it's really nothing for us to, in our community, to really get behind. And it's the same with baseball. Every now and then, like, there are some exciting players here with the Braves right now, and Albies and Acuna, but they're not driving the young blacks like they should. Mm-hmm. You know, it's somebody out there that looks kind of like, that looks like you, that's playing, yep, the sport, but there's no excitement about it.
Right.
And the Braves are winning, but it should be something that's pulling and drawing the attention of our youth, and it's not, because basketball does it with LeBron and Steph, and football does it with OBJ. It's just exciting. It's more now. It happens. And I don't know what it's going to take. I think it's hard because it's becoming a high-dollar sport to get involved with when you're youth. Yep. These travel teams and all this, it costs money to participate in that. Then it's an all-day, all-weekend, like,
yep,
thing to be involved in. Believe me, I did it. I know. Travel teams and all that, if you're really involved in it, and it's becoming specialized, where kids are just playing one sport.
Right.
So if you stick into one sport, it's easy to get a basketball and play, but baseball takes more equipment. Mm-hmm. So football, yeah, or basketball kind of draws our youth, so I can see why it's not what it is. So
Just one more thing. I think baseball and hockey, like you said, they're sorely out of touch, and I think what they don't do well is they don't court certain demographics like the millennials, the, you know, the the 18 through 34 demographic. They don't court though that demographic and other key demographics, and that's why they are where they are. And to me, in my opinion, it just seems as if they don't care. And until they start to care about those key demographics, it won't change. They'll never have a player in the top 100 most famous athletes.
We don't even have a lot of black kids playing at the HBCUs now.
Right.
You see that? You see that? I mean, they're bringing in white kids to play there and Hispanics and everybody.
Yep.
So, I mean, we're even losing that.
Just a couple of other things about the list. There are three swimmers that made the list.
Wow.
They're all from China. There are two table tennis players.
That's bad.
Two table tennis players are on the list.
That's bad.
One badminton player and one from a Formula One and one figure skater. But you guys can all go to ESPN and check out the World Fame 100. And they can sort it by country and sport. But yeah, no baseball, no
hockey.
No hockey.
So do you think there's someone to blame that there are no baseball players or hockey players that can be among the 100 most famous athletes in the world? I mean, I still don't know what Mike Trout looks like. He can walk in here right now. I would not know who he is. So during our football season, we had a segment called Ballers and Busters, in which we gave our Ballers of the Week the players or teams of the week who played very well, and then the players or teams, and sometimes coaches, who did not do so well during that previous week. And this is one of the best moments in which we all gave a buster, because there was just a lot of bad football as far as playing, as far as sportsmanship. There was plenty to go around.
This is a buster you got to give out, okay? You got to give out. And D-Will, don't take it personal, because the word Alabama will be in this.
Okay.
All right?
As long as it ain't Crimson Tide, I'm good.
Yeah. But South Alabama is my bust of the week. South Alabama loses 52-0 to Georgia Southern.
Oh, my God.
Now,
go ahead,
for all who do not know, Georgia Southern has how many wins before they play?
Zero.
Yeah. You let a winless team.
Order what? A 50 piece.
A 50 piece. 50 piece. Extra crispy. Are you serious?
Get that 50 piece.
Hold on, man. The coach, what are you doing? 52-0 to a winless team?
Wait, South Alabama, they're FBS, right?
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Georgia Southern is FCS.
Yes, no doubt.
So you got shut out by a winless FCS team. Was it on homecoming, too?
My goodness.
So now you see why I had to have that bump.
Let's go. Yeah, my bus is a crotch grabber.
No!
I got to give it to him. Not Trump.
I know.
I'm talking about Baker Mayfield this time. Not Donnie.
Oh, my God. He said it's okay, though.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about Donnie Suge Knight. Because he run the government like death row. He running the United States like death row.
Wow.
But anyway, I wasn't talking about him. Might go to Baker Mayfield, national TV. He grabs his crotch and says Frosted Flakes to them. So I'm going with Baker Mayfield.
I mean, I have the unanimous buster. I didn't have an honorable mention.
Right.
So I'm just going to wait till we get to that.
Wait, go.
Okay.
I'm going to let either you or D-Will can flat out just flat
I'll
that.
Start.
Well, we
I'll
together. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll start. All right. So clearly, my buster of the week is Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills.
God. Yeah, you Great. Give it to him. You give it to him. Go with him. Yeah.
All right. So not only does he send out a fifth-round rookie quarterback to start over his previous starting quarterback, who was playing pretty decent. He had a couple of bad games. But not only did he put out this fifth-round rookie quarterback who goes out and throws five interceptions.
In the first half.
In the first half. Three of them in the first quarter.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the press conference after the game, he says, well, you know, there were some things that didn't work out, but then you saw some plays that, oh, those are pretty darn good. Like, I don't know what plays he is talking about. I don't know where these plays were. He completed as many passes to his own team as he did to the other team.
Wow.
And he is also, again, he's also still a buster because he is going to start Tyrod next week. So he went right back to him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He had them alternative facts. That's what alternative facts.
I knew him.
Well, we got the unanimous. And since he went with the coach, I'm going to go with the player. I don't care how bad you are. You know that your team wears the same color jersey as you have on. Throw the ball to them, okay? It is Nathan Peterman, I understand you were put in a precarious situation. It was lose-lose for you, I understand. But I have to tell you, when you back up, you scan the field, your job is to throw the ball to the team that wears the same color jersey as you. And I have to go with McDermott. For him to go back to Tyrod, make the comments that G just said, and then to come out this week and to name Tyrod the starter again, you just contradicted everything you said about you saw exactly, good plays.
Exactly.
Because if you had any confidence, you would have went back to him and gave him another chance. But no, you went back to Tyrod. Now, I am going to say this. I kind of got the feeling that it wasn't him that made that decision to pull Tyrod. I believe that came from the higher-ups. So if that's the case, come on and say it, because guess what? You fired anyway, bro. You're not coming back next year, so you might as well lay it all out on the table.
I agree.
Well, I agreed that Sean McDermott was going to be fired. He wasn't. The Bills actually made the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor as their starter, and then they promptly let him walk over to the Cleveland Browns, where he is currently the starter ahead of Baker Mayfield. So that's why that moment was put in, because it all comes together. It all comes to Cleveland. But someone who was leaving Cleveland was LeBron James. Did he leave with one of our NBA SRT tinnies for winning the MVP? Let's find out. And we are back with our second annual SRT NBA Awards, affectionately known as the tinnies.
The tinnies.
Hey.
All right. So, as again, our esteemed SRT NBA panel voted on awards. I gave them each nominees, and we're going to announce the winners of those awards. All right, so first, we're going to go with the Coach of the Year. All right, the Coach of the Year, our nominees this year were Dwayne Casey of the Toronto Raptors, Mike D'Antoni of the Houston Rockets, Quinn Snyder of the Utah Jazz, and Brad Stevens of the Boston Celtics. So, our winner is Quinn Snyder of the Utah Jazz.
Whoa! Woo! Quinn Snyder!
Well deserved.
Hey, can't beat that.
All right, so go to one of our voters for Quinn Snyder, and that would be Jay Smooth. So, Jay, what made you choose Quinn Snyder for this award?
He went to Duke. No, I'm just
saying. Hey, there you go. What the Utah Jazz have done this year was, in my mind, completely unexpected. For them to win nearly 50 games,
yep,
is, well, I wouldn't call it unprecedented, but like I said, it's a shock to me. Donovan Mitchell played a part in that, and under Quinn Snyder's tutelage or coaching, you know, he's turned this kid into what I expect to be a Hall of Fame player. They were missing Rudy Gobert for
26 games,
and he, who was my defensive player of the year when he was on the court, he was the difference. He made the difference for them, and they were also one of the better defensive teams in the league. He knew he was working with limited talent, but he managed to get the most out of Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, and Ricky Rubio. He actually looks serviceable now.
He grew his hair.
Yeah, he did. I think Rodney Hood, even with the loss of Rodney Hood, they were able to bring in Jay Crowder. And was Shumpert there? Iman Shumpert?
No, he got traded to the Kings.
The Kings. Yeah.
He actually hasn't played. He didn't play a game.
Yeah. Wow. Well, he's on TV now, so it doesn't matter.
With that IG model.
Right. No, Tiana. Yeah. But
I'm talking about his extracurricular.
Uh-oh.
That's what his former teammate is doing.
Yeah. But yeah, Quinn Snyder has done an amazing job. And Utah, they did benefit from key injuries throughout the Western Conference. But you still can't overlook what he has done with Utah.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Well deserved, Quinn Snyder. Yes, sir.
All right. So our next award is the Most Improved Player Award. All right, look at our nominees here. We have Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics, Clint Capella from the Houston Rockets, Spencer Dinwiddie of the Brooklyn Nets, and Victor Oladipo of the Indiana Pacers. And our winner is, by unanimous vote, Victor Oladipo.
Wow.
Well deserved.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Well deserved.
So I'll go to you, HO. What made Victor Oladipo the most improved player to you?
Indiana probably are not supposed to be in the playoffs when you look at the beginning of the season. Oladipo averaged, 22 points a game this year, 23 points a game. When he got traded to OKC last year and played, he never got his rhythm. He looked lost. It just didn't look right. I mean, if he was that good, why would you get rid of him? He went, got traded to Indiana, worked out this summer, got his body right. And here again, we talked about at least Hancock's and us talk about how the development of these guys coming out of school, if you give them a couple of years, get in the right system, the coach believe in them, and Nate McMillan obviously believed in them. He turned it up, and he had an outstanding season. Don't be surprised if Oladipo actually gets some MVP votes as well.
Right. But can we also say that, and this might sound, playing with Russ is hard. It just really is. Playing with Russell Westbrook can cloud a lot of what you do. And that might be a more simple way of saying it. But I think it was a twofold thing with him, because I think he learned how to be a lead guy under Russ.
Right.
I think watching Russ, Russ does, on his report card, like I told you, under conduct, does not play well with others.
Right.
So that's just what it is. But I'm sure he was able to understand the game a little more, knowing when to take over. And you could see him being more assertive here in Indiana is what they needed.
Right.
So I think it was twofold. I think it's like he went to school and learned under somebody how to be a lead guy.
And got traded. And then exploded.
Exploded.
So.
All right. So our next award is the Rookie of the Year.
Uh-oh.
And our nominees are Kyle Kuzma of the L.A. Lakers, Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz, Ben Simmons of the Philadelphia 76ers, and Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. And the winner is Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was the split?
The split was 3-2.
Okay.
That's
closer than I thought it was.
Yeah.
So he did not vote for Donovan Mitchell, but I'm going to go to Hancock on this one. Yeah. What gave Ben Simmons the edge to you over Donovan Mitchell?
I just think that what he does in a basketball game can't be quantified by just saying those points, him scoring a bunch of points. He actually controls tempo. He plays defense on that end. If you watch him, he just puts his whole imprint on the game. I think Ben Simmons is the closest thing we've seen to Magic Johnson coming to the NBA.
I agree.
And that might be a little biased for me, because Magic is my favorite basketball player of all time.
Am I?
But I watching the way he's able to dictate in the game on the break, he can set up and post. The one thing he doesn't do well is shoot, but he knows that. So he plays to his strengths, which is what you want a basketball player to do. Anything that I say might be
you know, might sound like I'm hating on Mitchell. And so it's not that I even want to say anything about him, because I think Donovan Mitchell had an outstanding year. But when I look at it and I start my franchise, I'm starting with a guy like Ben Simmons. Ben Mitchell would be good too. But Ben Simmons, I think, is to me what he's done. See, what we always hear is, well, Donovan Mitchell came in as a rookie and took this team over and whatever. Well, the Sixers last year without Ben Simmons didn't win 50 games.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's playing this year and they won 50 games with basically the same roster. Yeah. You know, so, you know, that's my point. I think he is legit rookie of the year. I think a lot of times it starts to be the narrative. Some negative things come out about he shouldn't, you know, the way he acted in college, that he didn't want to be there. And then being hurt last year, somebody says, well, he's not a rookie. Well, a lot of people weren't, you know, were in conversations for rookie of the year that weren't in their first year being a pro. We've had that before.
And, right. And they've won.
They've won.
David Robinson, Blake Griffin.
So why is it now just because Ben Simmons is, it's almost like it's a, I almost feel like it's like a landslide, like it's just mounted against him because, and this is another thing, the process, I think, hurts Philly as an organization because people say, well, that's cheap. They tank to get these players. And now, so I think it's a backlash that's starting to happen with them.
Right.
I think anytime something becomes popular, the next thing to do is tear it down. So in that respect, but still, to me, Ben Simmons, to me, was my rookie of the year.
Okay. Well, that's, I kind of see what you're saying because it, well, it, no one was saying anything when Michael Carter Williams won rookie of the year. That was part of the process.
All right,
yeah.
Wait, completely different player. Yeah. He's talking Hall of Famer and
yeah. Is he even in the league anymore?
Who knows?
He plays for the either plays for the
Decatur
the Hornets.
Decatur.
I think he plays for the Hornets. But he's like the eighth, ninth guy off the bench.
Exactly.
All right, so we're going to go over to the Sixth Man Award, also known as the J. Smoove Award.
J. Smoove.
Our nominees are Will Barton of the Denver Nuggets, Eric Gordon of the Houston Rockets, Fred VanVleet of the Toronto Raptors, and Lou Williams of the L.A. Clippers. And the winner is unanimously Lou Williams.
Absolutely. Absolutely deserved. Absolutely. Can't go wrong.
So I'll come right back to you, Hancock. What gave Lou Williams the award to you?
I think he was in the running last year. I thought he possibly should have won it last year. He can definitely do what a sixth man needs to do. This is what we always talk about. I want a guy that when he comes off that bench, his goal and his role is to score.
Yes.
And that's what he is, a professional scorer. He automatically comes in against second units, and there it is, Mercy,
right,
because he has starter talent. So finding that niche to play the way he plays and put the ball in the basket for teams is a big thing. It impacts the game. He can turn a game. And I think him coming to and doing what he did with the Clippers actually had them playing pretty good basketball this year. So, you know, which is one of Doc's best jobs of coaching, to be honest with you. But I just think that seeing what I saw out of Lou this year, I just don't think he could be denied the Sixth Man of the Year award.
I think it would be his second.
Yep.
If he, you know, won the real one, it would be his second.
What you mean
one.
Real?
The other real one. Sorry,
the other me, real,
the other real one. All right, so we're gonna go to our Defensive Player of the Year. Our nominees this year are Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans, Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz, Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors, and Victor Oladipo of the Indiana Pacers. And our winner is Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz. All right, so H.O., you voted for Rudy Gobert, and what gave him the edge to you?
Well, this year was... It really wasn't a clear-cut favorite to me. But when you look at him in the lineup, their defense efficiency drops down to 12th. With him in the lineup, they between 1 and 3. I mean, when there is no clear-cut favorite, you got to go to
how does a person affect the game? And I guess I went a little analytics with this decision, but Rudy Gobert defensively has basically changed how Utah actually plays, and it gives them a lot of defense, and it also gives them an opportunity to perform on offense. So with Mitchell anchoring the offense and Rudy Gobert anchoring the defense, I think it was kind of like a perfect storm. I know he missed 26 games, but a lot of I think AD missed some games. I don't know if Oladipo missed any games, but Rudy Gobert, to me, efficiently was the best defender in the league this year as far as efficiency is concerned.
All right. And we're going to go to our final award, the one that everyone's been waiting for, the Most Valuable Player Award. And our nominees this year are Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans, James Harden of the Houston Rockets, LeBron James of the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Damian Lillard of the Portland Trailblazers. And the winner is, in a 3-2 vote, James Harden.
Wow.
Ooh.
Close.
Close. Wow.
It was very, well, of course, very, very close. So I'll start with you, Jay Smoove. You voted for James Harden. What gave him the edge over, well, the other two votes went to LeBron, of course. So what gave the edge over LeBron to you?
In fairness to LeBron, if I could have split my first place vote, I would have, because I think both candidates are very deserving. But to make a case for James Harden, I know this is not a team award, but and James Harden's numbers, to be honest, were actually better last year. But I think the addition of Chris Paul sort of siphoned some of his assist numbers, the rebounds, and you saw it in the end results. He only played 72 games, which were 10 less than LeBron. If you add an additional 10 games, he would have outscored LeBron. But one thing that sort of tipped me in Harden's favor was his 60-point triple-double against, just had it right here, I can't remember who it was, Orlando. They're pretty horrible, so a lot of people could have done that. But I think what it says is that if James Harden didn't have Chris Paul, he would have had similar numbers or identical numbers to LeBron James, or probably even better.
Right.
And I think I can't overlook the fact that Kyrie Irving, his absence, in a way, it boosted LeBron's numbers. LeBron had to do everything. Everything was put on his shoulders, on his back this year, which resulted in the boost in numbers for LeBron. And the addition of Chris Paul took away from what James Harden would have possibly done. He's been the best player on the best team in basketball in a deeper Western Conference. The West had 10 teams with winning records compared to 8 teams in the East with a winning record. So James Harden was the best team on the best conference. He led the league in points, three-pointers made. There was another one. He was top 10 in a lot of categories like player efficiency and even assist. So that's my reasoning for James Harden. I can't overlook the fact that, well, maybe I should say that he, I think out of the two of the last 3 years, I think he should have won it. And a lot of that played into my decision, even though it's this year.
So it's like a makeup call?
Yeah, for me, yeah.
Me too. He should have won it last year, in my opinion.
Yeah.
All right. As far as selecting Harden, what gave him the edge?
Well, I mean, a lot of what Smooth said, but simply, I thought he should have won it last year. I mean, if you voted for Russ for winning the triple-double, or getting the triple-double, well, he did it again this year, and he's not even in the top three. You know, so my thing is, and Harden did all this last year without Paul, and this year I just think that you would think that there would be some kind of chemistry issues that would have made them not win as many games. But to win, to be number one in the West.
10 more games.
To be number one in the West with the teams out in the West, and it showed itself the other night in the playoffs, in the first game, where I think they shot 4 for 26 for three or something. It was horrible.
Yeah.
But James Harden put the team on his back and ended up with 44 points. And, you know, that's basically what he's been doing all season. So, hey, Harden. Not that he's better than LeBron, but this year he's the most valuable player.
All right, do we have time to ask one more question?
Yeah.
All right, I got to ask Hancock, because he did vote for LeBron. And what gave LeBron the edge to you for MVP?
Okay, his coach is bad. His coach left. They've redone the team twice this year. His second best player is gone. Now, a lot of this is his doing. Don't get me wrong. But there's not an NBA player in this league that can go and take this roster and this situation that LeBron took this year and only be one less game behind what he did last year. If you watch the games, LeBron is scoring. He's defending, he's assist, he does everything for this team to be competitive. It's no doubt about it. You know, if you take LeBron off this team, then they might not make the playoffs.
Oh, of course not.
So I can't understand how the best player in the league, who does everything, his stats, his stats are better than Harden's across the board except for scoring. And his team is in the playoffs. It's not like they didn't make the playoffs. They made the playoffs. I just don't see. To me, it's just like when Jordan was in the league. It's just like now. It gets to be where we can't give it to him every time.
Right.
And it's like you said, it's a career achievement award. You know, people feel that some people feel Harden should have won the first year Steph won it. Then people feel like he should have won it last year over Russ. So this is kind of like a career achievement award. He's got his now. Well, he doesn't have his. He has a tenny,
right?
But and he probably will win, you know, the NBA MVP. But to me, without question, LeBron James is the most valuable player in the NBA. And this is coming from a guy that you know. I talk about LeBron's shortcomings all the time,
right?
But so it's not that I'm a homer for LeBron in any way, but I just feel like he is the legit MVP of this league.
Yeah, he is deserving, but I think you hit the nail on the head. There is some voter fatigue. I mean, the guy has won it four times, and, you know, I just want to see someone else win.
But the last one was five years ago.
Yeah.
Now, he shouldn't have won the year Steph won the unanimous to me. I don't think he should have won.
Makeup call.
Yeah, so, but I mean, you can make a case if you look at what he does and how he plays every year. He could have been an MVP.
Fear the beard.
Yeah, yeah.
Fear the beard.
Fear the beard.
Fear the beard.
All right, that'll do it for our SRT NBA Awards, also known as the Tennies.
And
next year we're gonna put on ties and tucks.
Yeah. Well, I would say we could dress like they do at the NBA Awards, but not like Draymond did.
Right.
At least not that.
Exactly.
Well, we thought how Draymond dressed at last year's NBA Awards was going to end there. And then LeBron dressed like that during the finals. And then Trae Young dressed like that at the draft. And now he plays here in Atlanta for the Hawks. So we're going to end the show here with playing some of our favorite drops that you hear throughout this show. Some of these you haven't heard in a while, and I'm not going to give too much context to them. So here you go.
First game in the Benzo, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Did it look kind of empty to you around the third quarter?
Mm-hmm. People had to get home, get ready for
it. No. I'm going to tell you what it was. It was the Los Angeles Lakers effect or the Miami Heat effect. It's so many attractions in the building that for halftime, they go do a lot of stuff. Halftime only 15, 18 minutes.
Right.
They're not back in their seats by the time the third quarter starts. At the beginning of the third quarter, you see number red seats. I was like, boy, this is a bad look.
This is a bad look.
This is a bad.
They probably waiting on Chick-fil-A, though.
They were standing in line.
The Patriots get 283 dimes in their Super Bowl rings. straight trolling the Falcons. Mm. Are you upset about that if you're a Falcon fan?
Okay, the second half score was what? 28-3, correct? So they go and put 283 diamonds in their ring. Not only that, they booked Gucci Mane, A-Town legend, to perform at the party.
Wow.
Now, that's the ultimate trolling. And I think they probably gave him about 283,000.
If Twitter was back in the day in high school, what would your Twitter handle be?
This is might go over a lot of people's head, but I graduated out of high school in 98 before the change and upgrade. So my Twitter handle would have been that good Reggie.
Did y'all see the phone call that Jeff Fisher made to Nick Foles when he had to cut him?
No, I missed it.
The phone call was, we have to release you, we have to let you go, and I hope you land on your feet. So, if you Nick Foles, how do you respond now? Z, how you go trolling?
My first thought would be to, like, I would be tempted to, like, get my Super Bowl ring fitted for my middle finger.
$106 million for Otto Porter. Are you out of your mind? Those are franchises that will never win. I don't care. You're not trying to win. Cannot be serious. $106 million for Otto Porter?
Well, who's crazier, please, though? Who's crazier, though? The Nets or the Kings for offering him that? Or the Wizards that are going to match it?
The Wizards.
Yeah, the Wizards.
Well, tenants, you know what that means when that music starts playing. It is time for us to get out of here. Well, just me. But I'd like to thank everyone who has listened and downloaded our show so far. Listen to us live on Facebook, on the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn Radio app, the Real 1100 app. There's so many places you can listen to us. There's no excuse for not listening to the hottest sports talk show on the radio. All right? And we'd like to thank our sponsors, Big Easy Grill, Real Talk Tees, Bobel Basketball Academy, Jay's Used Cars, Big Boy Cigars. Thank you to everyone who's listened so far. And I'm not going to try to do an impression of H.O. and Hancock right now, but I know they always end the show with, if you love the show, tell a friend. And if you didn't, we'll do like Drake did to his son. We'll hide the world from you. I'm out. Peace.